It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Sitting atop the food chain, humans feel pretty confident in our superiority to the animal kingdom. So much so, we're often amazed when we see animals exhibit behaviors that show contemplation, decision-making, teamwork, or even empathy. But how different are we, smarts-wise, from creatures with four legs, or more legs than four? Franz De Waal is the director of the Living Link Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center, and he has studied animal intelligence. He writes about what we know and don't know about animal intelligence in his book, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And we welcome Franz De Waal to the program. Franz, thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to be there.
So you tell a story in the book about apes in the London Zoo, and the keepers would bring out a teapot and cups and have the apes mime an afternoon tea. Why do you bring up this story?
Oh, that was sort of an amusing story that I heard from Desmond Morris, who worked at the zoo. They did these tea parties. Many zoos did that to amuse the audience. It's very strange, of course, they presenting the animals in this artificial environment where they were drinking tea. But the chimps got too good at it. So that was the funny part, is that the public started to become itchy and nervous because the apes were just as good at drinking from a cup and pouring tea in a cup and stirring it and everything as the Brits are. And for the Brits, of course, drinking tea is sort of the peak of civilization, and the apes were not supposed to be so good at it. And what then happened is they retrained the apes. They retrained them to make lots of errors and dunk the cups in the pot and throw the tea around and make each other wet with tea. So the apes became naughty and disorderly, and that's what people like to see, so they love that part.
It's interesting that people like to see that, and I wonder if that gets into our understanding of human intelligence. Where do most of our conceptions about animal intelligence come from?
Yeah, so this story illustrates that humans get nervous if the animals get too close to us, so we want to keep our distance. And I don't know what that is. Partly it's religious, that we have souls and they don't have souls, and so there's a whole religious background to this. And partly it is our overblown ego. We want to be on top of everything. We're going to be the best in everything. And so as soon as research comes out, like with Ayumu, the chimpanzee who had a better memory than humans, and scientists in the U.S. went into training to see if they could beat Ayumu, and they were really not able to, because Ayumu can memorize numbers on a computer screen much faster and better than humans do. And so people get upset when animals are better than they are at something.
We're talking with Franz De Waal. His new book is Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? I would guess that traditional perception of the fact that we are at the top of the food chain, so then we must be the most intelligent by a gap, perhaps seeped into the methodology that was used to study intelligence. I know that your entire book is about how we study things now and what we've learned. What major changes have been made by researchers in more recent years, including yourself, to correct some of the problems? What biases used to be there?
The problem was, of course, that we assumed for most of last century that animals either had simple instincts or very simple learning, and that was all there was to it. And this was all based on rats and pigeons in Skinner boxes, as if that's the only animals we should be looking at. And it only started to change, I would say, like 20, 25 years ago, when a new generation of scientists said, well, we're not into comparing animals necessarily with humans. That's not the goal. We want to know what kind of special cognition they have and how they need it in their environment. And so we started testing animals in a different way, in more complex ways than the Skinner box. And we set up experiments where they have to cooperate, or they have to share food, or they have to understand each other, or to understand a problem. And so a much more exploratory type research, where we throw everything at them to see what they can do. And it turns out that lots of animals have an enormous amount of skills that we were not aware of before.
That poses an interesting question. How much of this behavior is intelligence versus instinct? For instance, we might not think of insects as being particularly intelligent, but yet they're very good at cooperating.
Yeah, so even in insects, we have now evidence for learning how to solve a problem and so on. But certainly, certain things that you don't think as cognition. So, for example, a bat. Bat has echolocation and can fly around in the dark and even catch prey in the dark. That requires an enormous amount of computing power because it has to pick up the echoes of its own signals in order to do that. So you have to have specialized brain to do this. We usually don't think of bats as necessarily being so terribly intelligent doing this, but in terms of cognition, which means processing power, it is a very complex task. And so all of this falls under animal cognition, and the bat is specialized in something that we cannot even do, and that's why we ignore it, because it doesn't relate to us. We're so human-focused, it doesn't relate to what we regularly do, and so we don't consider it as part of intelligence.
When we think about intelligence, are there certain criteria that are a hierarchy, as it were, of cognitive abilities that we can say a bat is smarter than a pigeon or something like that? Or is that the wrong way of thinking about it?
Yeah, I have trouble with that way of thinking because that's actually what we were doing most of the time. We had this skill, the ladder of nature, so to speak, where we are on top and the mollusk is at the bottom, and we were always comparing up and down this scale. Whereas what we really have in nature is more like a bush with many peaks of specialization. So, for example, the crow family and the parrot family are very cognitively, very highly developed, and we don't necessarily see them that way because they're birds, but they are. And so we're not dealing with a ladder. And so the question, for example, are you smarter than an octopus or are you smarter than an elephant, is not necessarily the sort of question I want to ask because I don't know. Comparing you with the octopus, there's lots of things you can do that are wonderful that the octopus cannot do, but the other way around also exists. And so what are we comparing there, you know?
I guess that gets into the reason that maybe a lot of these things have gone unexamined for so long. You use the example of an octopus. An octopus is extremely good at using its brain for its environment. The environment is so alien to us, there aren't a lot of anthropomorphic things that an octopus might do, but it exhibits a great deal of intelligence.
Yeah, the octopus can change color. There is a type of octopus that can mimic the movements of certain fish and adopt their color so that they look like that fish. And the octopus has a nervous system. They have a big brain also, but they have a nervous system that is spread out over all their eight arms with lots of ganglia. And so there's millions of neurons sitting on their arms, which of course is not something we can compare ourselves with. And so that question of whether we're smarter or whether, let's say, is a bat smarter than an octopus, that's a sort of strange question, really.
We're talking with Frans de Waal. He is the director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center, and his new book is Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? So, Frans, you mentioned earlier the religious-based conception that we are at the top of the animal kingdom because of having souls. The one thing that I'm curious about that we consider ourselves to be superior, I guess, to animals is the concept of empathy, that only humans perhaps have that developed of a brain that they can empathize with others, including animals. But that's not the case. There are mammals that also are capable of empathy.
Yeah, that's a topic that I've worked on for many years, the empathy of chimpanzees. For example, chimpanzees, they will console someone who's distressed. So if one of them gets beaten up by somebody else, then others will come over and embrace and kiss and calm them down. And that's usually what we use as a measure of empathy in children. And so I don't see why the same behavior shouldn't be called empathy in chimpanzees. And recently I was involved here at Emory University at a neuroscience study on voles, where we can do neuroscience that you normally wouldn't do on a chimpanzee or an elephant or so on. And the neural processes behind it are very similar to what happens in humans during empathy. And so it's pretty well accepted now that all mammals, and maybe also birds, but certainly all mammals, have empathy. And that's also why your average listener has dogs and cats at home and not lizards and snakes. Because we like that part of the mammals. We like that they relate to our emotions and we relate to their emotions. We like that emotional connection that is provided by empathy.
Frans de Waal is a primatologist and the director of the Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center. His new book is called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? He's been joining us this morning to talk about it. Frans, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.